This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this podcast is provided by Afoundria, the makers of ChartPath. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. This podcast will focus on the status of assisted living in the United States. The statistics demand attention. According to the National Center for Assisted Living, NCAL, there are nearly 29,000 assisted living facilities in the country. More than half of their residents are over the age of 85 years, occupy almost 1 million beds, and are five times more likely to live on the West Coast than in the Northeast. 14% of assisted living facilities have a dedicated dementia care unit, and the vast majority of facilities provide healthcare services via vendors, from pharmacists to nutritionists and mental health counselors. Assisted living facilities employ 20% of the nation's nurses and represent a $76 billion industry. Nine national organizations, including the Alzheimer Association and AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine, have come together to form a Center of Excellence in Assisted Living, or SEAL. However, in a controversial July 2013 episode of the Public Broadcasting Service series Frontline, entitled Life and Death in Assisted Living, we raised questions around quality, staff training, and whether the lack of governmental regulation, adherence, or oversight played a role in compromising both. It led to ongoing questions of what assisted living was and what it was not compared to the highly regulated nursing home industry. And today, despite NCAL and SEAL advocacy and initiatives, it appears that individuals, families, providers, and various healthcare settings like hospitals and emergency departments remain confused about the role that assisted living can play within the healthcare continuum. Is there going to be clarity on the horizon regarding the integration of assisted living facilities into the healthcare mainstream? Can they answer the call for quality care and attention that will really be demanded from an increasingly fragile and medically complex aging population? What is the status of the assisted living facility today? Well, I can think of no one better to help us navigate through these questions than thought leader, change agent, and innovator in senior living programs than Dr. Stephen Fuller. And we're fortunate to have Dr. Fuller with us now. Dr. Fuller is the Executive Vice President of Clinical Affairs for Doctors Making House Calls, the largest geriatric practice in the Southeast United States, delivering on-site health care to over 400 assisted living facilities. Dr. Fuller, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Thanks very much, Wayne. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Fuller, I typically like to start with somewhat of a historical perspective to set our framework for discussion. And I think that your August 2019 Caring for the Ages article entitled Seven Challenges to Living Must Get Right is a good springboard for doing so. You begin the article simply with the statement, the assisted living industry is fascinating, which frankly is not a thought that you hear individuals commonly utter, ever. When I think of assisted living, I think of a place where people go to downsize, receive more help with functioning, have a dedicated meal, or just not be alone. As always, a number of questions to start our time together. What makes assisted living fascinating to you? Are assisted living facilities more than just this social model of care or supported apartment living environments? How has the industry evolved over the past 10 to 20 years? How have we now come to have a Center of Excellence and NCAL, which is labeled a voice of the American Healthcare Association? Bring us up to speed, if you will, on assisted living.
Well, Wayne, I think it's a fascinating industry because when you step back and really trying to bring together the two contradictory but simultaneously opposite approaches of a congregate setting where we bring our fragile elderly people to this setting. One is synchronized care, where where it's necessary to synchronize certain aspects of the daily life of seniors, for example, meals and transportation and activities and so on. but also that we need to consider the opposite, and that is a person-centered care where the individual desires and the characteristics of residents are respected. And so it's an interesting blend of these two opposite approaches of managing the lives of these elderly people. But the intersection where all these necessities converge is really in healthcare, and that's where there's a major challenge. One of the original challenges is that is dealing with the extent to which healthcare is really emphasized in the assisted living setting. And this goes back to the roots of assisted living back in the 1980s, where the first assisted living community formally started on the East Coast in Oregon under the auspices of Karen Brown Wilson, where assisted living was really born out of nursing homes. Yeah. And wanted to be a more residential setting that was an alternative to standard nursing home care. And ever since that time, we've really been struggling with how to manage residents that have such high healthcare needs in a residential setting. So that's a struggle that's ongoing today. More recently, we've used the term integrated care, and that is the blending of a healthcare model within assisted living social model. This is really a challenging adventure, and it's been sort of an equal challenge ever since assisted living had its origins in the 1980s through today. Thankfully, we're having more dialogue about this particular challenge today, but there needs to be more action. One of the challenges is the persistence of a residential care model that really does not give full acknowledgement to the healthcare demands that are incumbent on the residents who come to assisted living specifically for healthcare. Mm-hmm. They don't come for residential care, they come for healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so we need to keep that foremost in our minds as far as the needs of the individuals that occupy this space. There have been several organizations that have come together to discuss this point. One of them is SEAL, the Center for Excellence for Assisted Living. However, I would challenge this particular organization, and if we're going to come together and discuss blending or integration of healthcare into assisted living, really on a leadership level, we need to have board members of these organizations that represent healthcare. SEAL happens to be one of these, unfortunately, that they're very talented and capable people who are on the board of SEAL, but there is no healthcare representation. And that just seems to me to be an opportunity for physicians to make a contribution in this organization. Mm-hmm. Other trade organizations that represent assisted living do a disservice to them by not having healthcare members on their boards.
I want to extend this part of the conversation in a little bit, but continuing from some of the points from this last question, in 2016, you wrote a number of blogs about assisted living that framed the industry uniquely and raised the level of debate regarding a central need for assisted living within the healthcare continuum. You wrote about the identity crisis of assisted living facilities, and you showed a diagram where assisted living is really in the center of the post-acute care universe. For a number of years, AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute Long-Term Care Medicine, has focused its attention on assisted living. And in some of your writings around assisted living, you also have discussed the convergence of healthcare, hospitality, which you've mentioned, real estate, and profitability, things we typically don't talk about in post-acute care. So is assisted living post-acute care? How does healthcare work within the business and the boardroom of the assisted living institution? How does or has or will or can the assisted living facility integrate within the healthcare system?
Well, to answer the question, is assisted living post-acute care, I'll have to say yes and no. First of all, post-acute care refers to healthcare. It doesn't refer to residential care. It refers to healthcare. And so if an assisted living community wants to consider itself a post-acute care provider, it can only do so if it has a focus and a commitment and a dedication to providing healthcare within this residential care setting. And that can only exist under an integrated care model. Mm. And so to answer the question, is assisted living post-acute care, for those operators who are committed to an integrated care model, then the answer is yes, it is post-acute care. For those antiquated corporations that do not embrace the healthcare model, then they are not post-acute care. Mm. They should not be receiving, in my view, referrals from any healthcare setting because they are not focused on providing healthcare. Those organizations that do embrace the integrated care model, in my view, are post-acute care providers. And there's a good reason for them to want to embrace this. One is, and not to be shy about this at all, one is for profit. If you want another referral base, the healthcare system is a great referral base for an assisted living community. But you have to be cautious about this, but still it's a referral base. And so that will just help to continue to contribute to your occupancy and the profit that you derive from that. And that's fine. And another reason why this would be important is because this is where healthcare is going now, that the direction of healthcare is toward the community. And assisted living is really a focus of that direction. If you look where when fragile elderly people, or if you consider when fragile elderly people have a healthcare episode and are being discharged from an acute care setting, they have to go somewhere to continue the recovery. Nobody really wants to go to a nursing home. It's not the most desirable place for most residents to consider their recovery, and yet to go to a standalone home means that they may be in a setting where it's beyond, they don't have the capability of accessing the services they need for the recovery. And so assisted living can be a setting that is most appropriate for these people recovering from an illness. And they may then decide that they want to remain in that setting after the recovery. Mm. And so I feel that assisted living is a destination setting for a certain group of fragile elderly people recovering from an illness that would benefit from this setting. And so this is a good reason to want to be a post-acute care provider.
Our interview will continue after this brief message from Afoundria, the creators of ChartPath. Our world is changing, and the demands on your practice are growing. Nobody wants to just buy an EHR. You want a technology partner by your side. That's why they built ChartPath, a simple-to-manage and simple-to-use EHR backed by a dedicated team 24/7 that will guide your practice through MIPS and help you manage your growth. Most importantly, ChartPath is efficient, so you can continue to give your patients the high level of care you are known for and still make it home in time for dinner.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Fuller about assisted living. Dr. Fuller, lead us through your caring article and some of the key issues that assisted living needs to reconcile to be a true valued player in the post-acute industry. How will it manage the care of the more complex patient that you've just described? How will it facilitate the coordination of care and communication? How will it deal with acuity and issues, as you point out in your article, around falls does not mean solely making a phone call to the family and promptly sending someone to the emergency room via 911. How will it validate quality and participate in quality measures? And how will it generate data which show a positive impact on care, where you note that only 3% of facilities actually generate any data now? Lead us through your article.
The first challenge for assisted living that must get right is, of course, just what I just finished describing. And that is the integrated model of care. Assisted living communities must realize that they appeal to a fragile group of seniors, and they cannot separate seniors from their health care. That when seniors come to your door that you market yourself to, they come with an average of 8 to 9 different chronic diseases, taking an average of 6 to 7 different prescribed medicines, many of them more than that. And the integrated care model is absolutely necessary in order to provide the care that they are asking you to provide. A second challenge that must be addressed is transitions of care. When seniors who are fragile transition between different settings, and very often they do, as everyone knows, managing that transition and keeping that the communication coherent between these different transitions, and making sure that the care plans from one setting to the next setting are being delivered appropriately, really demand a focus on transitions. And this can be best addressed using a healthcare coordinator to help manage that transition. And a healthcare coordinator, for a lot of reasons, can be one of the most valued employees within assisted living community, in my view. The third thing to we must get right, and this is really important, I feel, is acuity. First of all, trying to define acuity is something that must be done. And acuity is sort of like love. It's hard to define, but it's what it is when you're talking about it, just like love. And when I think about acuity, I think that acuity applies to your health. That if you have good health, you do not have acuity. My 32-year-old daughter, who teaches martial arts, does not have acuity. On the other hand, residents who are on average 85 years old and have many chronic diseases and taking many different medications do have acuity. Mm-hmm. And so it's health that makes your acuity. And so I have a particular preference for defining an acuity using a combination of chronic diseases and the number of medications. That's a long discussion, but that's something to consider when addressing acuity, is how many diseases one has and how many medications one has. Acuity is also important is because if you don't have a clear way of defining acuity, it may find itself accepting a resident who has acuity that is too high. And the danger of accepting a resident whose acuity is too high means that the demands on the services that are provided within that assisted living community may also be too high and consume too much time of the caregivers and too much time in communicating with healthcare professionals and so on. And it may be way beyond what that community is capable of handling. Another danger of taking acuity too high is that you're in danger of becoming more like a skilled nursing facility. Mm. And if you're continuing to take residents with higher and higher acuity levels, there's going to be very little difference between you, assisted living community, and a skilled nursing facility. And also, there's limits regarding licensing that limit the sort of acuity that the assisted living communities can take. Mm. And so, my view is that the assisted living community should be very careful in how high of acuity that of residents that they allow in their communities, and that they should they should be able to define acuity, and that they should only accept acuity levels that only reaches a certain point, but not go beyond that point so that they can capably manage that acuity. The next point, which is the fourth point of the challenge we must get right, is chronic disease management. And chronic disease management is very important because assisted living communities, the residents of these communities have an average between 8 and 9 different chronic diseases. And that means that if you're an assisted living community with 100 residents, for example, you're managing 100 residents with between 8 and 9 different chronic diseases, which means you're managing every single day 800 to 900 chronic diseases in all these individuals. And you're doing so with a handful of CNAs and maybe a nurse or two. And that is just an astounding challenge to the successful operations of the assisted living community. These chronic diseases demand 7 to 8 different medicines on average for these residents. And so these med techs are passing between 700 and 800 different medications or more every single day to these residents. And that opens up another whole potential risk profile. And so the management of these chronic diseases is very important. Mm. One of the most important things about the management of these chronic diseases is the communication that's involved. And so when it comes to chronic disease management and assisted living, it's not teaching the doctors or the providers how to manage chronic diseases, because that's what they already know. And that's what they went to school to learn how to do. The challenge is closing the gap between the physician and the resident within assisted living. That the resident is way off in a room in an assisted living community somewhere, and the physician is off-site in another location. And how to communicate changes of condition and concerns and needs between this gap is a tremendous challenge. And so really, in chronic disease management, it's not the diseases that necessarily need to be focused on, but it's closing the communication gap between the physician and the resident that's most important, in my view. The fifth point, the seven challenges that the assisted living must get right, are data and analytics. The days of not being able to track your data and analytics and being able to examine your performance must be over. They have to be over, because now, at least what has emerged in the more contemporary times, is that people are very cognizant of the importance of data and want to follow performance and how that's measured in with respect to data. And it's not that hard. It's not that hard to do, and there's no really magic to do it. You just have to do it. The communities already have the data in their hand. For example, if you want to look at length of stay, you already have admission dates and discharge dates for length of stay, and you can examine that and correlate that with other healthcare metrics to see whether or not a particular healthcare intervention affects length of stay and affects the quality of a person's life. You already have customer satisfaction surveys, and most of the time there's so much information in the customer satisfaction surveys that it's ignored by leaders of senior housing and assisted living. Mm-hmm. But there's a wealth of data that provides insight into your customers. And so there's already a lot of data available. It's a matter of examining that data and using that data to provide the best care for the residents. The sixth challenge I must get right that was in that article are quality measures, that people want to follow quality measures. And the most, the gorillas in the room at this particular time are readmission rates, ER transfer rates, hospitalization rates, and a host of other things like pressure ulcer and falls and so on. These are things that must be measured, and you must be able to measure it and then use your data and analytics to display that information to referral sources that would merit a referral to a particular assisted living community. And there's a whole sorts of quality measures. Cheryl Zimmerman, who's a noted authority with assisted living and who's the editor of JAMDA, as you know, with her husband, Phil Sloan, has written extensively about quality measures and which ones would be meritorious to implement in the assisted living setting. And if that's not enough, just take the quality measures from the assisted living origins, which is skilled nursing. Use some of the quality measures that skilled nursing measures in their assessments and apply those to assisted living. Those are the best ones to use. And so there's no magic, there's no mystery. It's just a commitment to do so. And then to use your data to implement interventions in your community that will drive excellent performance with your quality measures. Mm-hmm. Finally, falls are so important to get right. And very often there's just sort of a reluctance to manage falls in an appropriate way and to actually think that you can have an impact on fall reduction. Nobody talks about falls elimination, but we should talk about falls elimination and eliminating them from our buildings, from assisted living and skilled nursing buildings. And it can be done. But that's not a pop point of view, and actually very few people talk about eliminating falls totally. I would suggest that, for those who may not think that it's possible, to consider that, well, maybe your payers will think it's possible. And so maybe a payer could perhaps withdraw or withhold one day's reimbursement for every fall that you have in your community. Falls are a real issue. They're easy to track. And the interventions can be data-driven to have a real positive impact. And there's lots of ways to do this that I could discuss with any interested reader that would want to contact me after this podcast.
Dr. Fuller, as has become customary in the time we've remaining, I wish to be a little provocative with you. And frankly, if one were to drop in during your last answer, one would think that you're talking about skilled nursing and not assisted living, just from the terms you were using and how you were speaking. So it seems to me that, we're really coming down to the role of assisted living in healthcare, kind of a line in the sand, a line that separates the social model from the medical model, a line which in some states has already been crossed. I mean, but these places are not skilled nursing facilities, although they're compared to them. Will that line between social and the medical model need to be formally crossed in order for assisted living to fully integrate into, into healthcare, this integrative model you're talking about? What will that mean regarding regulations and oversight and quality, especially when you think about exposés like the one done by Frontline? What would be the impact on nursing facilities if assisted living facilities actually were able to cross that social medical model line? what's the future of assisted living?
Well, I think, you know, those are good questions, Wayne. And I think that assisted living should be a complement to, but not a competitor to, skilled nursing. That I think assisted living should accept residents that only have a lower level of acuity than is available in skilled nursing. The danger of accepting residents whose acuity is too high is that you're going to be caring for somebody. You're going to accepting residents with a large demand for healthcare services means you assisted living community are going to have to provide the infrastructure that would allow you to care for these people appropriately, and that's not something I believe most assisted living communities want to do. That you can maintain a social model and maintain an emphasis on healthcare as long as the acuity of the residents that you accept is limited. So I would just say in general terms like that, Wayne, that the line in the sand should not be crossed. And I would say the line would be the acuity line, that you should not go beyond a certain level of acuity in assisted living with the residents that are accepted in that care. That perhaps was reflected in the Frontline article where in a large assisted living corporation, the resident in question, who was the focus of that Frontline expose, was not managed appropriately because that corporation was not equipped with an integrated model, but rather a hospitality model that would allow them to manage that person. And that meant that particular chronic disease, dementia, was not managed well in this hospitality setting. And so you can think that they didn't manage dementia well. What we have to remember is that dementia is just one of many chronic diseases. So you can imagine if dementia wasn't managed well, then probably other chronic diseases were not managed well either. And so the expose just really underscores the importance of an integrated care model. And so I guess my overall takeaway would be the most favorable model would be an integrated care one. If it's just a hospitality model, then there's very little difference between a hospitality setting and senior apartments, which are much cheaper. One of the crucial aspects of an integrated care model would be to develop relationships with physician organizations who can provide on-site health care to your residents. Really at no cost to you. They come in and provide the on-site care just as our organization does to over 400 assisted living communities. The presence of a healthcare professionals in the setting, it just really ups the care level that residents receive, and then has additional benefits of increasing length of stay and reducing hospital utilization and losing residents because of declining health. I guess that's a final plug for the integrated care model, the importance of on-site care, and the final cautionary step with not taking residents who have an acuity level beyond your ability to manage.
We have been privileged to speak with and learn from Dr. Stephen Fuller. Dr. Fuller, thank you so very much for spending your time with AMDA on the Go.
Thank you very much, Wayne. I've enjoyed our discussion.
References for this podcast can be found at paltc.podbean.com. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for this innovation podcast that we call AMDA on the Go.
Support for this podcast is provided by Afoundria, the makers of ChartPath. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast's title. Thank you.